Welcome to the Diplomats Podcast on Asian Geopolitics. I'm Ankit Panda from New York, and joining me here today is our China editor at the Diplomat, Shannon Tiezzi. Thanks a lot for joining me, Shannon.
Sure, happy to be here, Ankit.
And Shannon and I are going to spend some time discussing China-Japan relations today, a perennial topic of interest for us here at the Diplomat. Specifically, we'll be looking at reports that have been coming out of Japan that the Japanese foreign ministry has made an important concession to China on the issue of the Senkaku Diaoyu Islands dispute. Just so everybody's aware, Japan has traditionally maintained that there is no dispute about the sovereignty of the Senkaku Islands. They are indisputably Japanese territory. Now, as diplomat readers might be aware, the relations between Japan and China over the past 2 years have not been great, particularly since Shinzo Abe came back to power and Xi Jinping came to power in China. In essence, there's been no significant high-level diplomacy between the two sides, and Abe and Xi have not met in 2 years, which is honestly quite remarkable if you consider the size and stature of Japan and China, both as economies and powers in the Asia-Pacific. But this could be looking to change now, because with the upcoming APEC summit in November, the Japanese government has been trying very hard to arrange for a handshake between Xi and Abe. And essentially, this concession about the Senkaku Islands is one of the preconditions from the Chinese side for any sort of significant interaction between Japan and China. And obviously, this has many ramifications. Shannon, why don't you just tell us, so do you think that this is really one of China's major issues with Japan right now? Obviously there are other issues like historical remorse, which the Abe administration hasn't yet conceded on. Do you think that Beijing will go for this as an initial acknowledgement that could lead to greater dialogue between the two sides?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think China, as you said, has two main issues with Japan, and there are two main concessions that they were originally demanding as a precondition for any sort of high-level contact between these two countries. One was they wanted Japan to admit that there is, in fact, a dispute over the Senkaku Diaoyu Islands, which, according to reports that are coming out of Japan now, and again, nothing has been confirmed, but apparently the Abe government has decided to make that acknowledgement. The other issue is China demanded a concrete and sincere expressions of remorse and regret from Japan for Japan's actions during World War II. And of course, what constitutes concrete and sincere expressions of remorse is entirely up to interpretation, but that is something that we haven't seen Shinzo Abe budge on. In fact, if anything, he's gone the opposite direction with having his cabinet issue a report on the background behind the Kono statement in which Japan officially apologized for the issue of the comfort women. And while Shinzo Abe has not personally visited the controversial Yasukuni Shrine since 2012, he also hasn't ruled it out, and he's had several cabinet members continue to visit, and he's continued to send gifts. So it seems if we say Japan is going to make this concession, and Shinzo Abe and Xi Jinping are in fact going to meet in Beijing, it seems to indicate that for China, the historical issues aren't in fact as pressing as the current territorial dispute. Now, that being said, the Senkaku Diaoyu Islands dispute is itself very tied up with history. From the Chinese perspective, these islands were stolen from China along with Taiwan in the original wave of Japanese imperialism back in the late 19th century. And Japan holding on to them is sort of the last legacy from World War II Japanese imperialism, and returning the islands, if China would be able to get them back, would be a major way to sort of address those historical issues without actually addressing them. Be sort of righting the last wrong left over from World War II.
Right. From the Japanese perspective, I think it's interesting to note that there are several good reasons for Japan to actually acknowledge that a dispute exists. I mean, first of all, as we've been seeing over the past 2 years, there's really been no real stabilizing action when it comes to the Senkaku Island disputes. We've all been waiting with bated breath for, that fated day when a Chinese aircraft is shot at by Japanese anti-air defenses, or, you know, vice versa, something else happens that could lead to a broader sparking of war. But I think with this declaration, if and when it does happen, it could be a highly stabilizing move. I mean, also, if you look at Japan's history of territorial disputes with South Korea, for example, over the Dokdo Takashima Islands, Japan acknowledged that a dispute existed there, and it actually deferred to international law, which the South Koreans weren't willing to accept. Now, that could be in the cards for the possible resolution of the Senkaku dispute. I mean, obviously, you know, it goes without saying that China would not budge on the international law question here either. I mean, it hasn't in its other territorial disputes. There's no reason to do so with Japan. But it could make Tokyo appear more conciliatory towards Beijing in general.
Mm-hmm. I think what's really interesting here is that this could just give both sides a way to return to the status quo. When Japan and China first normalize their diplomatic relations, there was a sort of a tacit agreement that they weren't going to address this issue. They both knew that they had competing claims to the Senkaku Jiayu Islands, and they were just going to not make an issue of it. And obviously that agreement has been broken in recent years. China blames Japan for nationalizing the islands, and so since they're the ones who broke it, Japan says that China sending fishing boats to act as sort of a quasi-military force around the islands was the problem. But if the two sides do in fact enter into negotiations and talks over the status of the islands, even if those talks go nowhere, as I would expect in the short term, both sides can then say, we're doing something about this, we're talking about it, and that gives both governments domestic leeway to more or less ignore the issue in all other meaningful ways. So it would be a great stabilizing factor for China-Japan relations if they were able to enter negotiations over the status of these disputed territories.
Yeah, I think it's also interesting to remember, and I think a lot of people tend to forget this, is that when Japan nationalized the island, Abe and the LDP actually weren't in power. That was during the DPJ government. Yoshihiko Noda made the decision, and that was to prevent Shintaro Ishihara, who's the incredibly nationalistic former governor of Tokyo, from purchasing the islands for himself. They used to be under private ownership, which had prevented this dispute from essentially coming to the forefront between the two countries. And it just so happened that after the DPJ nationalized the islands, Shinzo Abe, the face of Japanese right-wing nationalism, was elected prime minister. It was really an unfortunate sequence of events. I mean, also something that I've discussed in the past is that I always thought that China wouldn't be willing to deal with Shinzo Abe, as a personality, because Abe stands for everything that I think China finds incredibly offensive about Japanese foreign policy. Abe stands for, some people say, remilitarization of Japan, for ignoring Japan's historical misdeeds, and all of that, I think, made Abe simply a persona non grata in China, that there would be no question of talking to Shinzo Abe because he simply represents something that China cannot abide in Japanese politics. So I always thought that, it would be Abe's successor, whoever that would be, a more moderate politician, so hopefully that would reopen the door for a return to the status quo in China-Japan relations. But that doesn't seem to be the case. Do you see a scenario in which we could return to the status quo of friendly relations between Japan and China with Shinzo Abe at the helm in Tokyo?
I think it's important to keep this in context. Yes, it is a major step that we might have the first face-to-face meeting between Shinzo Abe and Xi Jinping, but we're still talking about more or less a handshake. They're supposedly going to shake hands. They might make some very carefully scripted remarks, but we're not talking about any sort of real personal connection. This is very much just a starting point, a way back to the road to eventually have China and Japan have a more normal relationship. Where it goes from here, I think, is going to be heavily dependent on Shinzo Abe himself. I mentioned earlier that he hasn't been willing to rule out another visit to the Yasukuni Shrine, at least publicly. We don't know what private assurances he's given to Beijing, if any. So if he then, meets with Xi Jinping in Beijing and then either later this year or next year visits Yasukuni Shrine, I think that will really be a breaking point for the China-Japan relationship. China would feel like it made a concession to Japan in agreeing to this meeting, and then Shinzo Abe more or less turned his back on the relationship. But that being said, I think what is happening here with China and Japan is that China is realizing maybe Shinzo Abe is here to stay. I think it's important to remember that we went through a cycle where prime ministers in Japan were lucky to make it a year in office and then were voted out. So China might have been honestly hoping that the same thing was going to happen to Abe, that they just simply wouldn't have to deal with him. They could afford to ignore him and let China-Japan relations stagnate under his leadership. And then they would hope that the opposition party would be able to gain power. And Clint from The Diplomat has written a bunch of great articles about how the opposition in Japan just isn't able to take advantage of Shinzo Abe's unpopular policies, frankly. I mean, the constitutional reinterpretation to allow for collective self-defense didn't have a majority of popular support. And Shinzo Abe's Abenomics aren't working quite as well as we would hope. So there's definitely some reason to think that maybe he would be gone, and yet he's managed to stay on. So Beijing might have simply realized, okay, it's been too long. We can't just sit here waiting for this guy to get booted out of office. Maybe we do the bare minimum of interaction with him and kind of bide our time while letting the relationship make its way slowly back to normalcy.
Yeah, and then there's always the I think the more likely path here is that if this does revert to some sort of normalcy between the two countries, it will likely be at the ministerial level. So Abe himself will likely remain on the sidelines. I mean, just before we end this podcast, I wanted to sort of discuss one, I guess, speculative point, which is if this does happen and Japan acknowledges that there is a dispute, there is the question of what this means for the United States security guarantee for Japan. Because in the past, at least during President Obama's visit to Japan in April, it was essentially explicitly clarified that the Senkaku Islands fell beneath the Mutual Defense Treaty. And right now, as I covered for The Diplomat a few weeks ago, the U.S. and Japan are currently in the process of overhauling their defense guidelines in the light of Japan's decision to reinterpret its collective self-defense ban. And Japan must have received a guarantee during that process that acknowledging a dispute with China would not lead to the United States essentially stating that it wouldn't come to Japan's defense if there were to be some sort of military events on the Senkaku Islands involving China and Japan. I don't think that Japan would acknowledge that there is a dispute with that or without some sort of guarantee from the United States that status quo would remain the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. I think from the U.S. perspective, it doesn't really change all that much. The U.S. has never really stuck to the Japanese position that there is absolutely no dispute. So I think for the U.S., the main issue is if China uses its military to attack a Japanese-administered territory, regardless of whether or not that other country has a legitimate claim to that territory, it's still an act of military aggression against Japan, and that is something that the U.S. would feel compelled to become involved in. So as long as Japan continues to administer the islands, even if it is in negotiations with China over the ultimate fate of who ultimately possesses them, I think the U.S. would still say, a military attack against these islands would invoke the Mutual Defense Treaty. But of course, the hope is that by entering into negotiations, this would become a moot point, and you would no longer have this constant threat of an accident or a miscalculation that would spark a war between China and Japan and then drag the United States in as well.
Right. Also, I think, you know, I mean, there's also, again, the interesting issue that comes up now that Japan has acknowledged a dispute is that some Koreans have argued in the past that under the U.S.-Korea alliance, the United States would have to come to Korea's defense over the territorial dispute with Japan, which obviously, you know, the United States wouldn't do that. But I think that this could be a case that ends up complicating how the United States understands its alliances in Asia. Anyways, thanks a lot for joining me, Shannon. This was really helpful, and we'll obviously be watching Japan-China diplomacy leading up to the APEC summit and beyond very closely at The Diplomat. So do keep an eye out for articles mostly by Shannon and Clint, our China and Japan editors respectively, on this issue. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks, Shannon.
Sure, always fun to talk China-Japan.